Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. And hello again. This is Mike Fader with The Turning Point. You know what? Sorry to be so fickle about it. Let's turn that up a little bit. Yeah, that's good. That's better right there. Thanks. If you live in New York City, you may know about this news story, if it is really a news story. But it has been in all the newspapers. I assume that anything in a major newspaper, this is in the New York Times, and it was in all our tabloids here in New York. If it was here, it was everywhere. You know, it spread all over the internet, especially considering the nature of the story. But it was big news and still continues to be sort of a continuing news story in New York City because it involves all kinds of aspects. It's not just a one-level news story. It's complex. Anyhow, it says, the headline says, Mayor says Times Square's topless women need to be reined in, which is... an interesting way to put it. This is about, I don't know, it was this week or a week and a half ago, this has started this whole news story, which has been going on and on and on. Mayor Bill de Blasio said on Tuesday that he sees the women parading around Times Square covered in little but body paint, not as creative artists, but as pushy panhandlers, whose efforts to separate tourists from their money should be regulated. The topless women, known as desnudas, Spanish word, have attracted more scrutiny than usual this summer amid complaints about their aggressive solicitation of payment to pose for pictures. Mr. de Blasio placed them in the same category as the gaggle of costume characters that have become nearly synonymous with predatory panhandling in and around Times Square. It's wrong, Mr. de Blasio said of the topless women's tactics during a news conference. We are going to look for every appropriate way to regulate all activity that involves either begging or asking people for a contribution based on, you know, the opportunity to take a picture, for example. The mayor added, I don't like the situation in Times Square. We're going to address it in a very aggressive manner. Still, Mr. de Blasio acknowledged that reining in de nudas was complicated by the protections afforded to artistic expression by the First Amendment. Performance artists, right? That doesn't mean we can't find legislative and regulatory solutions that still fall within constitutional protections. The mayor's staff declined to provide any details about what restrictions he is considering, saying that the lawyers were still studying the issue. Toplessness is legal in New York. Aggressive panhandling is not. True. Toplessness went all the way to the state appeals court, I think, and was allowed to be legal by the highest court in New York State since 1992. So theoretically, all the women in New York City, if you're living in New York and you're a woman, you can walk around topless if you want to. You may not want to. You probably don't want to. But or maybe you do. Anyhow, Corey Johnson, a city council member whose district includes Times Square, said that he and another councilman, Daniel R. Gorodnik, were working on a bill that would limit when and where de nudis and costume characters could ply their trade. Mr. Johnson said the goal was not to rid Times Square of the characters and other street hustlers, but to rein them in so they did not drive away the throngs of tourists. People come to Times Square from all over the world because it is a little quirky and slightly chaotic. I assume almost anybody listening to me has been to Times Square at least once. And because there's some allure to that, Mr. Johnson said, it's quirky and chaotic, to say the least. But if it becomes unsafe and creepy, that becomes a problem we have to address. The proliferation of the costumed characters and topless women, costume characters, they're referring to, this has been going on for many, many years. People, seemingly without any connection to the actual companies, dress up as Elmo, Minnie Mouse, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, Goofy, and whoever else, Iron Man, and they just wear these heavy, furry costumes, total costumes with just their, you know, legs showing underneath. And they've been, asking, they pose for pictures, usually with kids, obviously, because people come there with their kids. I don't know why, because it's so crazy. And then they ask for money, but sometimes they've been very aggressive. The proliferation of the costume characters and topless women has gone beyond the subject of jokes by late-night comedians to being a frequent source of drama and cause for police intervention. Tim Tompkins, president of the Times Square Alliance, said. Mr. Tompkins said that a survey of people who work in and around Times Square found that 45% of them had either witnessed or an unpleasant interaction with a costume character or someone else soliciting payment from tourists. During 1 week in late June, the Alliance counted more than 120 costume characters and 11 painted ladies in the area. It's an old-fashioned term, right? The topless women often accost men as they walk through Times Square, grabbing their arms or rubbing up against them while offering to pose for pictures, Mr. Tompkins said. The costume characters, outfitted to resemble Elmo or Minnie Mouse or the Incredible Hulk, have been employing similar tactics for years. They pose with wide-eyed children, then seek payment of $5 or more from their parents, sometimes berating the tourists for not handing over enough money. Elmo pissed. And then, you know, some of these guys were presumably men inside these costumes, or women, because usually they're pretty tall, so I'm assuming they're mostly men. They get very angry, and they curse sometimes. There's been arrests. On Sunday afternoon, the police arrested a man dressed as Olaf, a character from the movie Frozen, after a woman complained that he had spurned her offer of $1 and angrily demanded $20, Mr. Tompkins said. The allegation did not surprise him at all. This is happening thousands of times a week, Mr. Tompkins said. If I spend 10 minutes in Times Square, I will witness someone being deeply upset. He often tells tourists who are being harassed by costume characters that they do not have to pay them. But he said he tries to avoid confrontations with the people wearing the costumes. He said he had also consoled people who appeared to have been upset by such run-ins. If you talk to someone after they've just been ripped off, they are crying and embarrassed, he said. We deserve better in our public places. Just get a little water here. I've seen this, you know, these guys, these people dressed up as Elmo or Minnie Mouse or whatever. They stand and pose with people, and then they demand money. Sometimes people, I mean, automatically, people give them a tip. That's something that people understand, but then they demand money. One thing that makes you, so is it a free speech issue? Do they have the right, do these women have the right to pose topless? Apparently, according to the state of New York, they have the right to walk around topless all they want. But then if they are aggressive or demand money, does that go beyond performance art? Or is it just, you know, just aggressive panhandling, which is against the law in New York City? I mean, it's not against the law to panhandle. That is to, it's an old, interesting word for that. I wonder where that, when the origin of panhandling comes from. Probably from the Depression, right? Sticking out a pan and having people drop something in it. I don't know. So is this, but so if they say it's performance art, then they're protected constitutionally. Also, it doesn't have to be performance art. According to the top state court, being topless if you're a woman, and this was tested by some women on purpose. They, I think it was some people in New York City or upstate New York someplace. Seven women deliberately went out one day to have a picnic in a public place, and they were topless just to prove that since men could walk around topless, so could women, and there was nothing evil about women's breasts. It was just, you know, evil is in the eye of the beholder or the mind of the beholder. And one thing, so they're trying to figure this out. So it's a complicated thing, right? You can't really stop these people from walking around topless, and should you at all? I mean, but it becomes a pain in the ass when they are just grabbing some man by the, if you're walking through Times Square, and people walk through there. I used to walk through there to go to a radio show that I did down in right about a block off Times Square, and the studios were there. And, you know, would I make a big deal about it? No, but it's irritating, right? You don't want to get somebody, have somebody get in your face or have something else in your face, right, when you're trying to concentrate on something else. It's a little disturbing, but it bothers tourists a lot more because they aren't used to the craziness and the nuttiness of Times Square and of New York in general, Manhattan in general. One thing that occurred to me is, one thing I thought anyhow, is where are the owners of these trademarks? Forget about these nude women for a second, or semi-nude women. I mean, if, you know, this is the Children's Television Workshop, which is probably owned by some giant other corporation now. All the Sesame Street characters, Minnie Mouse, Mickey Mouse. I mean, Disney is a gigantic international corporation, and they have a presence on Times Square anyhow. There's a giant Disney store like on Times Square or a block away from Times Square. It's big business, and you're talking about tens of billions of dollars. How can they let these people walk around representing them? I mean, as far as I know, and I'm sure that this is the case, Minnie Mouse here and Mickey Mouse and Elmo and all these people who are dressed up as, you know, comic book characters, Marvel comic book characters, they are not hired by these companies, and they are doing damage to the companies. I used to work as a paralegal in a trademark and patent firm. They're actually doing damage to these companies because they're putting them in a bad light. At least that's what the lawyers for these companies would say. But nobody's ever done anything about it. I don't know why. Maybe because it would make them look like big, bad companies. God forbid. But Times Square, that these women are walking around nude in Times Square, well, that's one thing, like I say. That's a whole issue of American prudery. And people usually regard Times Square. I mean, there are places in every large city, maybe in every big town, but there are places in every large city where there's a kind of a public place where anything goes, where people sort of understand that the city is a place that, you know, there's business here and there's neighborhoods there and residential neighborhoods. But there's some place sometimes in big cities where anything can happen and anything sometimes does happen. And Times Square has always been for like more than 100 years, the place in New York City in the middle of Manhattan where almost anything happens, the way the boundaries are practically non-existent. And this has been going on for a long time. The libido is totally loose in Times Square, and it's generally not, well, I can't say it's always been bad, but it's always been at least crazy, if not actually sordid and bad. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of commercialism, obviously, in Times Square. If you've been to Times Square, it's really all about money. It's about these gigantic signs for all these corporations that are around there and for all the movies. And what makes it even more interesting with these naked women, or near naked, I should say. They're not completely naked. So it sounds like it's a wish on my part, right? That hasn't been tested out yet. I guess that's still illegal, right? But what makes it even more, it's hypocritical about people getting upset about this is there are signs in and around Times Square over the last several years, maybe the last decade or more, gigantic signs of nearly naked models. And there used to be porn theater marquees in Times Square, but they got rid of all the porn theaters. But they didn't have pictures there. They didn't have like stills from the movies. But right now, I mean, if you go to Times Square, you will see gigantic, almost nude, certainly with very much sexual allure meant to be, you know, projected from these things. I mean, pure sex is coming out of these giant posters and signs for lipstick and for clothing and for shoes and jeans and whatever else. This has been going on for 20, 30 years in Times Square. So the idea that actual women suddenly are going to get in trouble for being topless when the place is, a kind of a mecca and a symbol of everything that is like over the top sexual and commercial and sordid all at the same time. It's sort of hypocritical to pick on these couple of dozen women or dozen women or so. It's not even a couple of dozen. But Times Square is always, it's always been like this. Times Square has a long, long history. It's a place, you know, the phrase, the Chinese phrase, feng shui. An ancient Chinese concept, and it's still used by some people, I think, in China, and certainly by some people in other parts of the world. And everybody sort of understands this, that there are certain places where that has certain energy, certain places that come up through the ground, and the energy comes up through the ground, and it's either bad energy, maybe not from the ground, but focused, you know, comes up from the ground, and then there's something in the air, and there's something about the elements that's focused in this place. And some people in China used to, I don't know if they still do this, but if they want to build a house someplace, they would call in a feng shui master, somebody who, it's almost like, I remember divining rods, where they're people were looking for water. There is energy that we never see. And of course, we pay no attention to and we don't believe in anymore, or most of us don't. There is energy that flows through the ground and up through the ground, and energy that concentrates in certain areas. And sometimes it's good energy and sometimes it's bad energy. You can just feel it. If you've got your antennae out, if you've got your, your mojo working, you know, projecting outward or receiving inward, you can tell that some places are just bad places. They're just not good to be around. And Times Square has always been, the feng shui of Times Square has always been craziness and badness. I mean, and this started all the way back around the 1890s when it started to be a center. It was called the Tenderloin then. Tenderloin district. And from the 1890s to the 1920s, it was a center for two things, right? It was always commercialism, actually three things. Commercialism of a large, you know, macro kind with corporations and ads for large corporations. And then it was always a center for entertainment. a center for obviously Broadway shows, huge movie theaters, all the way up into the 40s. They had these giant movie theaters where people like Frank Sinatra used to sing and Judy Garland would do concerts. And so it was a center for entertainment, a big center for entertainment, and a lot of old-time songwriters and composers and musicians used to thrive there and do their work there. And but also at the same time, with all of the entertainment, it was also a place of kind of craziness. It was a place where, for instance, what's more famous than the gigantic New Year's Eve celebration, you know, the ball coming down, and up to a million people crowded into this one spot, drinking and screaming. And I mean, if I was to go there, I would have to be hauled away to the booby hatch. I could not stand anything like that. I mean, but I'm really crazy in the other direction. More than two people is a crowd to me. So, but I have never been. I know people who have been to Times Square on New Year's Eve. Maybe you once went there. Usually it's young people, obviously. But it's always been a place that's been crazy and sordid, kind of all at once. And it's no mistake, because it is a place sort of where I say where boundaries sort of almost by understanding, by common understanding, and maybe by the feng shui, by the energy of the place, where the boundaries between civilized behavior and uncivilized behavior, between what's right and wrong, are very loose or sometimes non-existent. I mean, from the 1890s to the 1920s, it was a pretty bad place to be. There was a lot of, aside from all the, for all the entertainment, which was a good thing, right? And all the celebration, any kind of public celebrations often happen in Times Square, you know, the end of World War II, the surrender of the Germans, the Japanese in World War II. I mean, in gigantic celebrations where people just let loose have happened in Times Square, like New Year's Eve. But also, it's also been a place that has always attracted, like I say, crime, sordidness, prostitution, gambling, addicts, alcoholics, and just plain violence. There's in the 60s, all the way through the 80s, and into the 90s, the early 90s, it was one of the most seedy, sordid places in the entire world. There was hardly anything that compared with how disgusting and sordid and sleazy this place was. And how would I know that? By reading about it, by passing through it, by, you know, you're en route. I mean, sometimes you would go to, you'd be going to a store or something like that, or you'd be driving through it or something like that. But it was a place where there were porn sex shops and porn theaters, and, you could buy anything and you could buy anyone. I mean, people were for sale, prostitutes. If you ever saw a taxi driver, a lot of that takes place in and around Times Square. Here's something from, and how else would I know about it? Because in the 70s, I was addicted to going to porn theaters. Yeah, and there was nothing more disgusting and more awful. And yet I was drawn to these places. Why? That's another whole show, I suppose. And at the time, what was I was married at the time to an ex-wife. And I used to go there, WBAI, where I did my show and where I was an assistant manager, was only a few blocks away from this area. I would go to this place called the Pussycat Cinema. The Pussycat Cinema. And it has since been torn down. Now, so all these places were thriving from the 60s to the 80s. Porn theaters, sex shops, stores that sold, cameras that were, half price because half of the stuff was stolen, or, and you could buy anything. You could buy guns, you could buy knives, and prostitution was thriving. There were muggers. There was a lot of violence and craziness. There were pimps. An incredible place. This is a little snippet from a description of Times Square off Wikipedia. As early as 1960, 42nd Street between 7th and 8th Avenue, which is part of Times Square, was described by the New York Times as the worst block in town. Times Square in that decade, as depicted in Midnight Cowboy, was gritty, dark, and desperate. And it got worse in the 70s and 80s, as is the crime situation in the whole city. But when anything got worse with crime, it was really worse there. By 1984, an unprecedented 2,300 annual crimes occurred on that single block. 2,300 crimes on that single block, of which 460 were serious felonies such as murder and rape on one block. So this has always been part of Times Square, too. So in the 90s, they also, I should say that this place is one of the largest tourist attractions in the world. And this all has to do with whether or not these characters that dress up and demand money, you know, after posing with children, and whether these semi-nude women are actually street hustlers or performance artists, right? And the lawyers can argue that one out. But, you know, I mean, the way it is that basically they're just putting on a show and demanding money. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, people stand on street corners all over New York City or in the subway, and they sing and they ask for money. And they don't usually even ask. They just have a hat or a little, a little bowl in front of them. But these people are aggressive about it. They are actually physically aggressive and sometimes abusive, which crosses the line from performance art into, aggressive panhandling. But I said, it is one of the largest tourist attractions in the world. Apparently, it's second only to Las Vegas in how many people it draws, tens of millions of tourists a year. The entire, and this is the larger picture here, Times Square, to come down on these people for being aggressive panhandlers, well, you know, people don't want to be bothered that way, obviously. There's got to be a limit to that kind of behavior. But to come down on aggressive panhandlers, probably all of whom are just trying to make a living in their own, you know, way, aggressive way, but at the same time surrounded by gigantic corporate presences and signs for gigantic corporations. And the fact that there are shops and stores, and this is after they cleaned up all the porn theaters and try to kick out most of the worst criminals out, surrounded by Disney stores, you know, the New York Yankees store, the M&M store, the Hershey store, everything. It's always been about business. So Times Square is a funny combination of business, sordidness, crime, and entertainment all at the same time. It's not a place. It's not a place where you go to have a little picnic with your family or to celebrate a graduation or to have a baby christened. It is Times Square.
See no more. Mama told me not to come.
But apparently it is the way to have fun. And then tens of millions of tourists pass through there every year. And the estimated annual income from businesses, from Broadway shows and from other businesses, is in the billions of dollars. The billions of dollars that are spent in Times Square. Times Square has always been about money, and it always will be about money. By the way, when I was going to the Pussycat Cinema, you know what? We could turn this up a little bit. Maybe it went down when the music went. Thanks. When I was going to the Pussycat Cinema, they cleaned up Times Square. And finally, the pressure was too much because the corporations who wanted to take advantage of the money coming into Times Square, they said, how do we leave this place alone for so long? And Disney and all these other places, American movie, whatever it is, AMC and all these other places, they said, we got to clean this place up. We can't have all these rapes and murderers and, you know, prostitutes and drug dealers and everything and alcoholics here. I mean, it'll drive away the tourists and we can triple, quadruple, you know, we can bring in far more tourists and set up all these giant restaurant chains regular stores, you know, like Disney stores and everything. But the only way to do it was to clean it up. So they did. They cleaned it up. They just arrested everybody. They closed these places down. Eminent domain, more or less. The city took over all the porn theaters and condemned them. Some of them have been changed into gigantic corporate stores. Others have been changed into actual regular first-run movie theaters. And so the Pussycat Cinema, for instance, which was somewhere around 47th and 48th and Broadway, which is just a little bit on the northern part of Times Square, it was changed and it was knocked down, or rather the building itself was, Pussycat Cinema was closed. What happened to all the poor pussycats? And all the iniquitous men like me who went to spend, their hard-earned money, or somebody's hard-earned money there. God knows what went on in those theaters. I mean, it was really awful. There was drug dealing. There was sex in the aisles, you know. it really was kind of disgusting. But that's where they played. That's where most of the porn theaters in New York were. So they closed that down. And the building itself either was knocked down or was changed into a Marriott Hotel. And really, you know, what's the difference? What's the difference between the Pussycat Cinema and a Marriott Hotel? I mean, what goes on in the Marriott Hotel, do you think, in Times Square? Yeah, a lot of legitimate business travelers. But what else happens in the Marriott Hotel in Times Square? Just a higher level of probably of pussycat-like behavior. Well, anyhow, that's Times Square. Strange, funny segue to I was walking with my wife in Riverside Park in Manhattan the other day on the Upper West Side. And it was about two weekends ago. And we witnessed that there are these little tiny mini playgrounds all up and down Riverside Park called Tot Lots. Tot Lots. Get it? Tot Lots. And a scene occurred, which was roughly like this. It was on a weekend, so a lot of the fathers were out there with their kids, it's for little kids. I mean, for like little practically babies and tiny kids and infants, no kids. And they have, you know, small swings and they have slides and everything. And the fathers are out there and the mothers are out there and sometimes like some nannies, because that's the kind of neighborhood it is. And there was one guy, a big muscular black guy, there's a series of rings which little kids have to be lifted up to by their fathers and mothers, and then they grab one ring and then another ring and they move forward, and it's a way to to exercise their muscles, and it's exciting. The kids love this, right? But they have to be lifted up because it's pretty high up in the air for them. It's like 6 feet. Well, there's this guy. He's exercising. He's working out on these rings. I guess they were strong enough so that they wouldn't pull out of the wooden, big, thick wooden beam or metal, holders that they were attached to. And he was pulling himself. He was doing sort of lift ups with his legs up because he was, you know, too tall. He would have hit the ground otherwise. And a car pulled up. The New York City Park Rangers pulled up, and two park rangers, both of a woman and a man, both of whom were Latino. And one we were passing by, and one of them said to the man, "Sir, are you here with a child?" And he said, "No." You know, he looked a perfectly decent sounding, nice looking guy. And they said, "Well, you really can't stay here, sir. To be in this park, you have to be accompanied by a child." Usually, right, that phrase is you hear that the other way around, you know. All children must be accompanied by an adult. But here is the one place where you have to be accompanied by a child. And really, you know, in a playground, was this a racial thing, do you think? I don't know. Do I think it was, if there was a father doing that, if it was a white father with a kid already in the playground, and almost everybody in these playgrounds, in these little tot lots, because of the neighborhood that it's right next to a very sort of wealthy, at least upper middle class neighborhood of, you know, lawyers, doctors, investors, banker types, and the fathers come out on the weekends with their kids when the mothers and nannies aren't with them. If this was a white father, if it's a white father exercising on the rings, would they even have stopped and questioned him? Probably not, I'm thinking. Probably not. But there, you know, there's a couple of black mothers and fathers with black kids, Latino fathers and mothers with their kids in there, but hardly ever. So it might have been a racial thing. Who's to say, right? Meanwhile, the guy, you know, he got his stuff. He had a gym bag with him, and you know, he just stopped there to pull himself up on the rings, and he walked out. But it's a funny phrase, right? And of course, you don't want single men in playgrounds. I mean, that's obvious. You don't want single men in playgrounds. You don't want to see that. I mean, anytime a single man walks into a playground, can you give me how much time is it again? 15? Thanks a lot. I know that sounds lame, but there are hand signals that we're using here, and I'm too senile to recognize them. So, you don't want, obviously, you don't, nobody wants to see a lone man walk into a playground. I was in a playground with my son once, and it was during a weekday. And especially during a weekday, because that's usually the fathers aren't there during the weekday. So you don't see men in a playground during the weekdays. You see nannies and you see mothers and that's it with their kids. And I was there with my son once, and he was playing in the sandbox that they have. And a man walked into the park. It didn't look particularly, you know, it didn't look like out of central casting for some disgusting, you know, child molester. Just looked like a guy, right? And he walked in the park and he had a book with him. Maybe he was intending to read this book. And he walked into the park. There are other benches to sit on all over the park. He didn't have to walk into the park. You don't know what his reasons were for being there. And it was instantaneous. The reaction is instantaneous. If a man, a lone man without a kid, walks into a playground, and maybe you've been in this position, you've been a mother or even a father, and you see a man walk into a playground, it's primal. It's a primal, like, visceral, telegraphic thing. I mean, the ears go up and the eyes move, and everybody is aware of this. And so they, you know, they're careful about men coming in there. But the idea of you must be accompanied by a child, and I'm thinking to myself, aren't we always accompanied by a child? I mean, aren't we always? Look what's going on in Times Square. People are dressed up in children's, television costumes, posing with children. Women are walking around with bare breasts. And people are, and Times Square on New Year's Eve, Times Square, people are acting a lot. When tourists go there, too, you know, they sort of let loose a little bit. And there's all kinds of shows going on. People go there in a way to act like a child. So in a way, we're always accompanied by a child, I'm thinking. And then I start thinking, what is really a grown-up, right? In Times Square, people act like children sometimes, or they act childlike, which is even more important. You know, there's two financial centers in New York City, really. One is the Times Square version, you know, the tourist and the commercialism that's right out there. And then there's Wall Street, right? The bankers with their $5,000 suits and their $1,000 shoes and their serious faces, you know, and their spectacles and, you know, their so are they grown-ups? I guess they're grown-ups, right? But people who dress up in fuzzy Elmo costumes or walk around with their breasts bared are not grown-ups. So this is a distinction we make. And is Donald Trump a grown-up, for instance? Donald Trump actually looks like a baby. I'm not the first person who's mentioned that. Donald Trump actually has a face like a baby, and he acts like a baby. And he is attracting the support and attention of a lot of people. We are always accompanied by a child. It's just that we have to make necessary adjustments in society, in relationships. And this is what we learn or we don't learn, something I've never learned very well, unfortunately. But this is what we do. And the only way, really, that I shouldn't say the only way, but the main way that people are able to maintain the childlike nature in themselves, or the main way, is to be with children, to have children. If you have children, it's not like you. But a lot of people feel like when they have children, they have to give up being a child. But you do have to assume a position of adult responsibility. You get to a certain age. Now, some people just don't do it. A guy like Donald Trump has never really assumed a position of adult responsibility, although he's run huge corporations and sometimes run them into the ground, real estate corporations and, you know, development corporations. There are many grown people, especially in show business, in the arts, and just other people. Maybe you're married to one of them. Maybe know some of them. You know, maybe they're your friends. People who just don't really ever grow up. And they can't make that adjustment. And one of the adjustments that you have to make, and it's a kind of a loss in a way, unless you replace it with something else, like having a kid, it's a loss. You have to sort of give up. You have to leave behind childlike things. What does it say there, the quote in the Bible? When I was a child, I spake as a child, but now that I am grown, you know, a bad paraphrase, I speak as a grown person, grown man, I don't know. You have to give up something to get something. You have to go, I know a psychiatrist once who told me, he said, if you want to leave the fourth, want to get into the fifth grade, you've got to leave the fourth grade. You know, if you want to move from one place to another, so if people understand that, but they don't understand it completely always, and a lot of people just don't get it at all. A lot of people just don't get it at all. But the ones who do get it finally understand that there are certain responsibilities that they have, and they sometimes go too far and think that it means giving up all childlike things. But that's what entertainment is for. And that's why Times Square is so interesting. That's what entertainment is for. And that's why, these Broadway shows are so exuberant. And I don't mean the plays, the serious plays, but the musicals, right? They're so exuberant, singing and dancing and what goes on in Times Square, like in New Year's Eve, it's the libido, which has not been tamed, you know, by the superego and has not been turned into an adult ego, is really sort of on display there. So how do you keep the kid in you? How are you always accompanied by a child? Well, the child is always with you. Sometimes the child gets lost. Sometimes the child never actually turns into an adult, and you are basically just a child, like a big child. But sometimes the child gets covered up in adult responsibilities, and that's when people take vacations. They sing and they dance. They play games, right? They go to movies that are adventure movies. They read stories. They play. How many grown people, quote unquote, play video games, right? What do the Wall Street bankers, what do the serious people do who are supposed to be, you know, the grown-ups? What do the lawyers and the doctors and the Wall Street bankers do? They've got to have a way to, and that's why a lot of people burn out, right? That's why a lot of people burn out, because they don't carry with them that child. Because, again, we are always accompanied by a child, that child inside of us. And but even in Zen, in Zen Buddhism, for instance, Zen and the art of archery, one of the things that the Zen masters were teaching, and this happens with Tai Chi too, is that they say, let yourself flow naturally like a child would. Like, for instance, when you see a little kid, you know, maybe 1 year old or 1.5 years old, and they point at something, they point with their whole body. Now, they don't just sort of like, you know, move their eyes over to something or say, hey, look at that. They don't just point their finger either. Their entire body points at something if they notice something, like a puppy does, right? Their entire body, every part of it, every nerve in them is focused on something and then focused on something else. And when they drop one thing to pick something else up, it's so natural and so unencumbered by any kind of obstacles or psychological problems. So the Zen masters in the art of archery say that when you let go of the bowstring, let go of it the way a child would let go of it. The way, if you've ever watched kids, if you had kids or you watch kids play, teachers probably have this opportunity all the time too. Teachers can maintain that childlike feeling by being around children all the time. But when a little kid wants to pick up a toy and they're having one toy and they have a toy in their hand already, they just drop it as if it never even existed and pick up the other one. And that's the kind of way that you let go of the bowstring. You don't just, you know, like do it with any force or any intention. You just let go of it and the arrow finds where it's supposed to go. So, yes, we are always accompanied by a child. We are always accompanied by a child. And Times Square is a funny place that way. So the child in people is allowed to come out there a lot, but it is stained and kind of mixed up and complicated by the fact that there's so much concentration of crass, overwhelming, root-deep American commercialism that happens there all the time. I mean, like I say, every city, every huge city has its place. I mean, there's the Mardi Gras in New Orleans. This is a time when people can dress up and act like, you know, act like children, or fantasies come out, and that also becomes big business too. But, you know, childlike behavior is suppressed for the sake of civilization, for the sake of relationships, for the sake of families. And but in Times Square and other places, you know, on Halloween, there are holidays that people are allowed to, you know, act and be, who cross these boundaries. They cross these boundaries between places. And I'm thinking, you know, the funny thing is that, and also, you know, there's a recruiting station in Times Square, and it's been there for a long time. It's a recruiting station in Times Square. They're playing soldier. I used to play soldier when I was a kid. So there's a recruiting station in Times Square, too. Are people playing children? Are people allowing their suppressed childlike feelings or their libido to come out? Yes, they are. But at the same time, it's twisted and stained, in my opinion, and sordid in a way by the overwhelming commercialism and bare greed that is displayed by all these companies in Times Square. Also, women's breasts, naked breasts in Times Square. What could be more in keeping with childlike behavior? I mean, what is a child, what does an infant want more than anything else in the world? He wants his or her mother's breast, right? So these women are walking around with their breasts bared, and men mostly, but, you know, I'm sure a lot of women too. People are fascinated by this because it's the thing. It's the basic elemental thing that they started out with. And the last thing I'm thinking about all this stuff is who's inside these suits? I've never seen one of these people take their head off, Minnie Mouse or Elmo or anything like that. Who's inside these suits? I mean, What kind of men and women, especially men, I'm thinking, are inside these suits? Are they people who have no other way to make money? Are they slightly crazy? Are they addicts? Are they alcoholics? Where do they live? And, you know, it's hot out there. It's hot and humid. And these people are inside these suits, or Elmo suits, fuzzy Elmo suits, all day long. I mean, it's extraordinary. Who's inside these suits? Are we all grown up? We are all grown up. Are we in? Maybe we're in grown-up suits, just in grown-up suits. And I don't know who's inside these suits in Times Square, but I wonder, or did you ever wonder, who's inside your suit? Who's inside your suit?
Am I wrong? You may say to yourself, my God, what have I done?